So you do things to bless other people because you follow a God who is a blessing God, and it will begin to attract some question. What is that about? That sort of thing. So what I would like to do is just amongst us here today, are there one or two examples from you of how you went ahead and sought to bless people because you're a you follow a blessing God? How did that work out for you? Just any of you? Marion.
I worked on one particular person that I knew needed to be blessed. And I did it every, at least once a day.
Wow, that is excellent. It's hard work with some people, isn't it? You don't know, but I'm sure it did something good. Yeah, see, that's good. There's all kinds of benefit from it. Yeah, any other examples? Libby. Yeah. Wow, yes, right. Excellent. Good for you. Yeah, just a prayer because that's what you can do, even if they don't hear it. Excellent blessing. I had one that I wasn't able to fully accomplish. As you know, I have a songwriting partner, a good friend of mine, and he had surgery about 10 days ago, so I got in touch with him. I did right after the surgery, but then once again, I said, how's it going? Should I bring my guitar over? He said, yes. But then it just didn't work. I had to cancel at the last minute. But just doing that, I think, blessed him a great deal, because he kept sending me new songs by email that we got to work on. So that was good. It was encouraging to him. That's the sort of thing that you keep that up as a habit, and people start wondering, okay, what's with you? Why are you doing this? So today what I'm going to do is go into the next habit that we're looking at, where you can have an even more questionable life, and that is eating with other people. Now, I know that you eat with people all the time. Just all the time. That's the way it goes. And often we eat by ourselves, but often, too, we eat with other people. There is an aspect of eating with other people that opens up something that is powerful, very powerful. And what I want to encourage you to do is to be thinking about, who can I invite to eat with me that I don't know very well, or who maybe doesn't know the Lord very well, or who God brings to mind in one way or another? Now just allow me to encourage you a little further before we unpack what that is a little more. You might be thinking, well, I don't get to do that very much. I don't have the opportunity, to have people just over for something or see what we can do, or we go out together. It doesn't always work out for me. So I want to suggest maybe you could have coffee or share a piece of gum or something, whatever it may be. Not the one that you chewed. Bring one, a clean one for them. Yes. All that blessing you did would be out the window then. So whatever it may, however you do it, the idea is communion comes before conversion. I don't mean coming to the communion table. I mean a wide definition of communion, where you have a relationship with somebody and you're moving in that relationship all the time. That opens them up to Christ. Eating together or sharing a stick of gum or whatever it is communion. It does something to the relationship, deepens it some, and that will help open them up further to Christ. Even if it's just a little tiny bit goes an awful long way. Just like some of you country western fans, a little bit of Bach goes an awfully long way. Same principle here. So, the reason that is the case is that an awful lot of our relationships that are not long-standing or not very deep are transactions. you do this and I'll do that. You help me, I'll help you. You give me money, I'll give you this. That's a transaction. When you are sharing a meal or coffee or whatever it is, you are moving away from a transaction into a relationship that is transformational. You're moving from transaction to transformation. And the transformation is one in which you and your friend are beginning to move along the path where you are equipped and encouraged through each other to do what you really care about. For those of you who are a little more religious, to pursue your calling, whatever it may be. What you just have your Popeye moment about. Do you know what I mean by your Popeye moment? Remember Popeye and olive oil? And Brutus would come along and pipe would start spinning and the spinach would come out. He had a Popeye moment every time the olive oil. What's your Popeye moment? Well, you care about that. And you need people who will encourage you and build you up and equip you for that in an open and relational sort of way. And when you are sharing a meal, that's what's happening. The communion, the relationship is deepening and you are moving into that transformation for both of you. Very powerful, very important. And I think as you consider that, you will see that that's happened an awful lot in this fellowship and amongst the circle of friends that you have. Whenever we gather together to eat, there's something going on besides enjoying the wonderful food that we have. Every month at potluck, that transformation is continuing after worship when we do that. Very, very powerful sort of thing that's going on with that. And that's what I think the Lord would have us do, is to find those opportunities that He is opening up where that transformation is happening not only with somebody else that we're concerned about, but through them with us too, in that sharing. And of course, Jesus did that a number of times, as you know. One of them is the road to Emmaus. And you remember the husband and wife were walking along and they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. And when we share like that, oftentimes there's something about Jesus that we recognize that we didn't recognize in another way. When you initiate that with somebody else, you are the one who's opening the door for Jesus to be recognized in a way that perhaps they had never recognized him before. Very, very powerful. Now, there's a couple of items in the reading that MJ shared with us this morning from Philippians, and there's one phrase in there where Paul says to the Philippians, he says, "You are my joy and crown." That's just an excellent kind of thing to be called, don't you think? Somebody writes to you and says, "Hey, you are my joy and my crown." That makes your day. What Paul is getting at here is that there's something about the Philippians that put them on that road to transformation. You might recall Philippi was the first European city where the gospel was preached. It's part of the Roman Empire, but it's in what is today a part of Europe. And Paul was the first one to bring it. And it was in Lydia's house where that happened. And her whole household, you recall, was baptized. All of that was happening around a meal and the way that they shared their household life together. And now Paul is back. He's writing to the Philippians from prison. He's in jail for being an apostle and all kinds of things that were thrown at him. And there he is. And he's writing this immensely encouraging letter to them, telling them, "You are my joy and my crown." Just absolutely wonderful. Now, of course, you're my joy. That's fairly obvious. He's very happy with them. He thinks of them and he thinks, man, this is great. But the crown, "You're my crown." That's a little more symbolic. And what he's telling the Philippians is this. There is a sign of victory carried in your life. And that sign of victory is this. It's the triumph of grace. And the triumph of grace that you show, that you display, is such that people can see it. And in that manner, you are my crown, because I first shared with you the gospel, and you have taken it to a point where it's obvious in your life to other people. They had been on a road of transformation. That road of transformation, for a lot of people, remember, begins with that shared meal. Tea. Or a stick of gum. Whatever it may be. It is that communion with each other that opens that up, that brings them on that road to transformation. And I've seen that a number of times, as you have. I've been with Christian groups that have gone on to the food court, you know, in a mall, and they sit down together and they get out the Bible or prayer requests or whatever it is, and they're encouraging one another as well as gossiping the gospel. You know, there's people in the next table. Every so often somebody comes up and says, "Hey, did you guys ever think of this?" or whatever it may be. Some of us together have also found that same thing, doing meeting for huddles in Panera or wherever. And everyone's been very polite who sat around us and not interrupted us, but I can see that they're looking like that, you know. It's great. It's absolutely great. And there's something about the way that we encourage one another that is putting us on the road to transformation, and other people begin seeing that. Very, very powerful. Very powerful. Now, that's the invitation that Jesus gives us. There's a challenge in that. And the challenge is this. For you to have that level of communion where somebody begins seeing that Jesus can transform them, even if they can't name it yet, even if they can't name Jesus as the source of that, for that to happen, it means that they have access to your life in a way that maybe they hadn't had it before. And that can be uncomfortable. It can be very uncomfortable. You just might be hungry and want to eat and leave, and there you are having this open door, and the Spirit of God is doing things and the transformation is going on, even if it's not very much. That means there's access to your life. And they begin seeing things in you. And seeing how you follow Jesus. So the to name the challenge, it's this. Whatever is facing you, you take that on as somebody who follows Jesus. And they see it. Which is different than you take it on in your own power. You take it on by cursing it. You take it on by who knows what. But you demonstrate, no matter what is happening, you are committed to following Jesus through that episode. And somebody that is sharing with you begins to see that. That access to your life can increase. And it gets to the point where you are showing what it is like in some dire circumstances, somebody who's really made an obviously awful mistake or offended somebody else in a terrible way. Once that happens, how do you follow Jesus? I mean, if you're the one who was the offender, how do you follow Jesus? And somebody needs access to your life to see that. Or if somebody comes to your house, you know, and whatever your family stage or situation is, or you have friends over, and they see you, and they walk in, and the tension is so thick with your family, or the people who are there, you could cut it with a knife, with a butter knife. Doesn't have to be a sharp knife. I mean, everybody goes through that. And you show that you, being aggravated, frustrated, whatever it is that's happening with you, you show what it is to follow Jesus in that situation. The person who has access to your life has now seen what it is to follow Him. What separates us from the world. It's not being squeaky clean by any means. It's not being sinless. It's no matter what happens, what you face, or what you've done, you can follow Jesus and you know how to do it. And you know how to do it to a degree and in a manner that somebody who's looking at you can also do it. Because they saw you. That's the road of transformation. That's what opens up when we share meals. Now, I'm not saying that if you share a meal with somebody this week or, you know, whatever, stick of gum, whatever it is you're going to do, and it's the first time you ever did that, that then immediately they're going to see everything about your life. It just may get to that point. But all along the way, the transformation has gone on with you, where you know that no matter what happens in your life, He is your rock, He is your fortress, He is your stronghold, and you know how to live that way, and you know how to live that way that shows other people how to live that way. That's what goes on. By the way, you know, that's part of our baptismal service. If you were to be a godparent, you would promise to live in such a way that the person being presented for baptism, this young baby being presented for baptism, would be able to structure their life and all their priorities growing up because they saw you do it. They would grow into the full stature of Christ because they saw you do it. That's what that's about. Possibly, if you're a godparent, you get to eat with that family for some years. And they see you. They see you doing it. Now, how do you get to the point where somebody who has access to your life is going to be able to see that you are following Jesus, no matter what? How do you get there? I'm really tempted to ask anyone to take a guess. I'll give you a hint. Two questions. What is God telling you? Here I am. The tension in my house is so great. What is God telling you? That's a kairos moment. The Spirit of God is going to break through. Something's going to happen to you. And what's God want you to do about what He is telling you? Probably apologize for one thing or something like that, but then there's something else. There's something underneath that. There's something about you being transformed more and more into the likeness of Christ. And any situation like that, somebody would be watching you and they would catch how you pick up on what God is telling you in the middle of it and how you are able to discern what God is asking you to do. And you're able to do that so that they can follow you. That's a questionable life. I mean, people are going to... You get to that level of access and somebody sees something like that or something, you know, as powerful as that, and they're going to say, how did you do that? I've never seen anything like that. Or even if they don't see it and they just start catching. That's the way your lifestyle is. And they come to you and they say, you know, I'm having trouble with this or I'm having trouble with that. How do you take care of that? And you can honestly say, I have messed that up so badly and had so much pain over something like that, I didn't know what to do, but then I knew God told me this. And I took that step. That's what happens. That can happen in a relationship that you have that you might have started by just sharing a stick of gum. Okay. That's what it is to have a joy and a crown. Paul did it from jail. He's writing from jail. He was able to have people into his jail cell. It was probably a house. He was under house arrest. He included the guards, you know. People would bring their, you know, the potatoes they grew at the church garden and bring them over to Paul. And the guards would say, I'm really involved. He was showing how to imitate Christ. And you and I can do the same thing. All right, it's Lent, so that's what I'm going to encourage you to do. See if you can do that. Make that a habit, a weekly habit. See if you can keep blessing people, making that a habit. And you start having this habit of following Jesus in all these areas so people can see it. Do you have any question at all about what I've presented to you today?
I have one question, actually. Could you tell me, so I would know from my point, what's the big significance in the Lent? What do you have to do? I understand that you have to give up something.
Well, here you go. Lent came into the Christian calendar as the period before Easter, and it was the time of preparation for those who were going to be baptized, usually on the night before Easter, and then it increased, you know, just kind of cascaded throughout the church as a time of you preparing to know Jesus better. You have my permission to give up giving up things for Lent. You don't have to. You can take things on. The purpose, the goal, the whole idea is that you know Jesus better on Easter morning than you did on Ash Wednesday by what you're doing. If giving up chocolate helps you do that, then give up chocolate. I would suggest not doing that. Yeah. I think we might have mentioned last week, if you give up some food, some kind of food during Lent, you tell God, I am hungrier for you than I am for this food. Yep. And you can fast all kinds of things. Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Very good. Let's stand. Lord Jesus, we thank you. We thank you that you have drawn us together. We thank you that you bring people into our lives that we can draw close to and together draw close to you with. We ask that you guide us this week in our plans. Help us to find the person you desire for us to share with, to go into a relational time with, in which we're both transformed to be like you. And that we would always seek that communion with other people before we expect them to do anything else. And we ask that for the glory of your name. Amen.